to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
We need to now take this knowledge and turn it into action. And that means raising public awareness around these connections between nature and health and start utilizing what we're calling a nature dosing as just part of our general wellness strategies.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's July 30th, 2021 program, Prescription Nature. Can time in the great outdoors save your life? This is a 42nd program for our 2020-21 programming year. My name is Kitty Piercy, and I am the City Club president. Glad you're here. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on your YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7. In today's program, we welcome Jared Handley, Nature Quant, Dr. Christopher Minson, U of O Human Physiology, and Katie Lynch, U of O Environmental Leadership Program. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Karin Knudsen for coordinating today's program. Can an hour a day keep the doctor away? After a year weathering the COVID-19 pandemic, no one can deny the therapeutic benefits of nature and wide open spaces. American national parks and other public lands are reporting record numbers of visitors for a second year in a row. But what about accessing nature's benefits closer to home? Can we all get the nature we need nearby? The answer likely depends on your zip code, maybe even your street number. A Eugene-based startup, NatureQuant, is combining data and infrared technology to create vegetation heat maps that show how healthy a special location is likely to be based on its green cover. Along similar lines, researchers at the University of Oregon are working to understand the influence of access to nature on environmental physiology, the study of how the environment impacts an organism's functions. As researchers quantify the long-term and holistic benefits of nature exposure, education programs that support equitable access become even more important. Today's City Club speakers will tell you just how much nature you need, what happens if you do or don't get it, and how local programs are working to expand nature access to everyone within our community.
Thank you all for joining us for the City Club of Eugene today. I'm Karin Knudsen, the coordinator for today's program, and I am pleased to introduce the first of our three speakers, Christopher Minson from the University of Oregon's Department of Human Physiology. Chris, take it away.
Thank you. Really an honor to be here and to speaking to City Club of Eugene. Quick side story. I was driving into Eugene, moving here 21 years ago, and just happened to be driving in a time when City Club of Eugene was on the radio, KLCC. And so my first experience to radio in Eugene was listening to City Club Eugene. So I'm really happy to be here and talk about some things that are near and dear to my heart. And that is really looking at nature, environmental exposure, and these different factors, how we can improve human health. I'm a professor at University of Oregon with expertise in biomarkers of cardiovascular and metabolic health and thermoregulation. So jumping right in, humans are really well adapted to survive in extreme outdoor environments. In fact, it's really helped shape human evolution. We used to be able to chase down animals that are much, much faster than us in the right environmental conditions. Hot, dry conditions, we can outrun gazelles and other things that were, you know, normally we can't even catch a squirrel. So it's by using the environment and our adaptation to these environments, we can really survive very well. Cold is a little bit different for us in the sense that we had to use our large brains to hunt and kill their animals and then wear their skins to keep us alive. But for the most of human evolution, we have been exposed to the natural environment constantly and consistently. Despite living and thriving in extreme environments, humans are homeotherms. We like to keep our body temperature really stable. We like to remain comfortable. We don't like to have these extreme challenges to our body and to the way we feel. By way of example, hot day, we're going to jump in our air-conditioned car, go to our air-conditioned work. Cold day, we're going to crank the heat in our cars and in our homes and our workplaces. And so we really are keeping our challenges to our homeotherm abilities really, really stable. And my question is that a problem? Well, I think it is. I think humans are becoming way too comfortable. Humans are becoming thermostatic. We're not challenging ourselves that way. There's a lot of aspects of nature that we're not getting exposed to that we used to. So this was brought up and discussed really well in a very recent book called The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. Really interesting book, great read, and goes into a lot more detail than I'm going to be able to go into today. We are really moving into what's called the urban century. We are now living in an environment that is drastically different than 99% of human history. We're using those large brains I mentioned earlier to get us to go from living in and doing everything outdoors to, you know, the turn of the century, the 1900s, where we started having improved air conditioning and heating, not to the 1950s, those have really come about. But those really did change dramatically what we're experiencing on a daily basis. And it's only gotten dramatically more so, again, mentioning the air conditioning in cars and heatings and in offices. We really don't have to spend much time outside if we don't want to. More than 50% of Americans do not go outside for activity or exercise at all. And the average child spends just 4 hours per week outside, half of what their parents experience. So if we look at the major causes of death in the United States, you know, five of the six, cardiovascular disease, cancer, respiratory diseases, diabetes, and Alzheimer's disease, are all physiological manifestations of disease and death. And of course, rates of obesity, inactivity, mental illness, they're all on the rise and are major contributors to modern diseases. So if you look at mental health in the United States as well, from the year 09 to about 17, there was a dramatic increase in the rates of depression rates in the country. And particularly we saw this rise in the like 16 to 25 year olds, dramatic increases. But even across all age groups, we're talking about 5 or 10% of the population has reported major depressive episodes. So really a major problem. And of course, now with the pandemic, anxiety and depression, our rates are even higher than ever, right? Many different cases of this, symptoms of anxiety and depression greatly increased over the last few years. Part of what I do in my research is to look at, can we use environmental conditioning to target these modern diseases? And particularly in my work, I've been focused on heat stress and cold stress, but I'll go talk about a couple other things as well. So the populations I've studied really look at people who are sedentary, people who are hypertensive or have high blood pressure, people who are obese, as well as the older individuals. And we look at a lot of physiological as well as biomarkers of memory diseases as well. So the question is, do humans need nature, or can they live entirely in a built environment and be healthy? Well, there's something called the biophilia hypothesis, and this is put forth by the famous biologist E.O. Wilson. It basically states that humans possess an innate tendency to seek out connections with nature and other forms of life. And this concept has been really pushing forward hundreds and hundreds of studies, really looking at and showing that nature equals health. And this is just backed by all this great data now. And it's taken to such an extent that the Japanese started this concept called Shinrin Yoku, or forest bathing. And this forest bathing is really just immersing yourself in nature. And this concept of forest bathing and getting exposure to nature is really driving a lot of changes to how we view city development and trying to get people into nature in urban areas. Does the science back this up? So this is data from Rojas Herrera from Colorado State University in 2019. And they performed what's called a meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is where they go through and look at a whole bunch of other studies, pull all their data and combine it to one very, very large study. It really is kind of the largest way of looking at data. It's one of the most powerful ways to be convincing about whether something exists or not. And what they found in this large meta-analysis is that they studied over 8 million people and found an increase in greenness around homes was significantly associated with reduced premature mortality. They saw a 4% reduction in premature mortality per increment of 10% in vegetation score. So 10% more vegetation around your home, 4% reduction in premature mortality, again, across over 8 million people. So this is really, really a profound study. Another really interesting study was by our colleague at Harvard, who we're working with. They've shown that using the Nurses' Health study, in which they looked over 100,000 women, and they controlled for many different factors for mortality, age, race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, smoking, and they linked people's address to how green the areas around their home within a certain radius, about 500 meters. And what they found is that women in green areas had a 41% lower death rate for kidney disease and a 34% lower death rate for respiratory diseases and a 13% lower death rate for cancer than those living in areas with less greenery. So again, these are powerful studies demonstrating that greenery is associated with improved health. Also, even some smaller studies have shown this, and there's been some interesting study by a group from University of Michigan, which they had subjects with major depressive disorder were randomly assigned to take 50-minute walks in an adjacent arboretum or on the other side of the building into an urban environment with buildings, cars, street noise, et cetera. And what they found is that mood and short-term memory both improved dramatically following the walk in nature versus the urban environment. They then had subjects do the opposite side on a separate day, and they found the same thing. So nature greatly improved mood. We also have some collaborations with people at the University of Oregon, and we're looking at how green exposure for kids and nature exposure for adolescents are going to may improve their rates of anxiety and other disorders. So the question is what's going on here, right? So my colleague, Jared Handley, who will speak next, will go in a little more detail on the individual basis for this. But we know that nature in itself can greatly improve our environmental quality, better air, better water, less noise. We also have great reductions in stress. It creates opportunities for physical activity as well as improving social contacts. And all this results in improved health and well-being. People who then are benefiting from this health and well-being are the more likely, therefore, to preserve green spaces. And that makes this nice circle that by preserving green space, making more nature, improving health, and it's a very nice circle of that we need to be really conscious of and be working towards. As we have systematically studied this fundamental change in our environment, we have found that there are many links between declining nature exposure and increased disease states. Exposure to natural spaces and increasing our nearby nature profoundly improves physical and mental health. And the bottom line is that nature is not a luxury, but an essential component of human health. So my big take-home message is every day, get hot, get cold, get outside.
Great. Thank you, Chris. I think I'll take it from here. And I also wanted to thank City Club for hosting what I think is a very important conversation here. As Dr. Mitzen discussed, you know, we are now living in an environment that's drastically different than 99% of our human history, and we are entering what many are calling the urban century. And further, it's becoming clear that nature is not really just a luxury, but it's an essential component to our health. Kind of on par with changes in exercise or diet, we think that nature contact can offer promise both as a prevention and a treatment for many serious diseases. So what I believe, and I think what, you know, more and more in the medical and scientific community are starting to believe, is that we need to now take this knowledge and turn it into action. And that means raising public awareness around these connections between nature and health and start utilizing what we're calling a nature dosing as just part of our general wellness strategies. And so, you know, one way I think I want to illustrate this is just kind of paint a picture for you, if you will. So here's what happens when you walk into a natural setting. And this is based on dozens of studies that have observed these findings repeatedly. So after you walk into a natural setting, your heart rate goes down, your blood pressure drops, your cortisol level goes down. And cortisol is like a stress hormone that that can be rapidly monitored. Your memory and also your ability to concentrate goes up. So if we test you after you've been in a natural area versus been in an urban environment, all those measures improve. Your immune system actually becomes stronger. And so there's these These cells are called natural killer cells. They're actually a white blood cell that can contain viral infections, or they also attack cancer as it starts. Your natural killer cells go up after nature exposure, and they stay up for weeks after your exposure. We've also even found that after you go into a park, you're happier. That's been observed not only via surveys, but you know, we've done this fun little association where we look at the sentiment of tweets, and we know if you're tweeting from an urban environment or from a park. It turns out when you're in a park, your tweets are incredibly happy, even happier than we see on Christmas morning. So I guess if there's one action item I think to take away from my comments is that you need to go outside, and you know, it looks like the right dosage at a minimum is to be outside for 120 minutes a week, so 2 hours a week. And when you're outside, ideally you're exposed to some type of natural environment. And in addition to that, if you can have your outdoor sessions be at least 20 minutes in length, that is preferable. So why else, I think, am I and many others so excited about this notion of nature prescriptions as a new health tool? Well, there's a bunch of other advantages. They're basically free, unlike, you know, most medications. There's very few side effects. I mean, you might get a little bit of a sunburn or a bug bite, but virtually no side effects of being outside. And it's very practical. You don't need a doctor to prescribe it or a pharmacist to fulfill a prescription. So it's quite convenient in that way. And there's just few other interventions or medications that can boast all these attributes. And then the one other thing I wanted to touch upon, and this I think steps a little bit away from nature and health, but I think it's important as we think about nature as part of our environment broadly, is that there's a lot of other what we would call co-benefits to nature around your home or just accessing nature generally. Our data has shown that nature around your home affects the property values. As Dr. Minchin mentioned, the more nature there is in a location, the more likely you're going to find better air quality, particularly as it relates to small particulate matter. Nature is one of our best tools for reducing urban heat islands, which, you know, as here we are in the middle of the summer, is a very important topic. Trees can even reduce your energy bills. They can block cold winds or provide shade in the summer. A lot of people find nature aesthetically pleasing. And we've even found that there's an association between the amount of nature where you live and the rates of disease transmission. So even things like COVID seem to be reduced when you're in an environment with a lot of nature. And we don't know if that's because of better air quality or improved immune systems or potentially all of the above. But these associations are profound. And they're not necessarily being utilized by a lot of public health approaches or city planners or even general economic models. And I think one of the reasons they're not broadly utilized is there's just not a lot of practical tools out there to quantify nature or assess the exposure of nature or to track the change in nature over time. And beyond that, we kind of lack a consensus around what is a standard measurement of nature or nature exposure. And so I was, you know, devouring all the scientific literature. I'm a big numbers guy, and I was reading all these scientific findings and then just observing the lack of public awareness around these connections and the lack of utilization of nature as a tool. And I wanted to find a way to bridge that gap. And I kind of ironically came to the conclusion that we need to use technology to get people outside. And because of that, we founded a company, myself and a few other co-founders, called NatureQuant a few years ago to solve this problem by delivering a suite of technologies that can assess and promote the impacts of nature on our lives. And we do this by giving nature a number. And I know that sounds oddly simple, but I do think it's powerful. I mean, if you think of something like Bitcoin, which really has no intrinsic value, but once you put a number on it and start tracking it and trying to optimize it, it just becomes part of everyday decision making. And we felt like nature needed a number. And so we did that. And the first way we did that was create what we're calling a nature score. And a nature score is really a measurement of the amount of beneficial nature around any location. So for example, you know, you can go to our website and get a nature score for where your house is, and it'll measure the nature within a certain radius around your home. And now we can use that data, much like, you know, that study that Dr. Minchin showed about nature and longevity, we can use that very precisely for anyone or any doctor or any public health institution to understand how is the nature in a region influencing that population's longevity or heart disease. And we can use it for things like real estate or mitigating urban heat islands or even studying how diseases transmit based on the presence of nature. So by creating a score for nature, it really increases our ability to understand the influence of nature on many, many outcomes. The second thing that we're about to launch is actually a mobile application, which we're calling Nature Dose. And what that does is it tracks your individual exposure to nature over time. So this allows you to do things like goal setting. You know, it became very popular a few years ago to like this notion of getting 10,000 steps. So this is a similar tool, whereas you're not really tracking your steps, but you're tracking your time exposed to nature. And beyond that, your time outside. You might be surprised to know that on average, Americans spend about 95% of their lives inside. And we'd love the ability to give you a little bump or notification every couple of days that says, hey, you haven't been outside recently. Why don't you go for a walk? And here's your nearest park. So we feel like beyond creating this Nature Dose app as an interventional tool, it'll also advance research. We will be able to very specifically understand what elements of nature are bestowing what benefits on individuals in terms of not just immediate things like mental health changes, but also over the long term, understanding how nature exposure relates to things like heart disease or cancer. So if you want to know more, just I think generally about our technology or the science between nature and health, we do have a white paper on our website if you're curious. It's naturequant.com. And then also we're about to launch a bunch of trial studies. And if you're interested in participating, we'd love to have you. You can just sign up on our info list at naturequant.com. So that's all I had. Thank you.
Thanks to City Club. Like Jared said, I'm really pleased to be here to talk about this really important topic. And since we are talking about connection to nature, I want to start by acknowledging that the place where I live and where I work here in Eugene and at the University of Oregon is on the Kalapuya Ilehi, the traditional homelands of the Kalapuyan peoples. And it really is their deep connection to place that in many ways is the inspiration for the project I'm going to share with you today. So just like Jared and Chris shared, there's overwhelming evidence showing that there's health benefits to getting outside. I'm going to switch the lens and show you the evidence and a case study about how nature exposure can also have positive outcomes in the academic setting. There is a really strong body of evidence showing that nature exposure, learning outside, can help children concentrate better. It can lower those stress levels, like Jared was mentioning, help children be more self-disciplined, and of course, more engaged in learning because they're having fun outside, as well as being more physically active and fit. In addition, there's many studies that are showing that nature exposure, learning in an outdoor classroom, provides a calmer, quieter, safer context for learning, as well as a more cooperative social context for learning. And in sum, all of these studies are showing that nature exposure really has some major benefits in terms of academic achievement, personal development, and stewardship of our natural world. So we see students with better reading, writing, and math scores. We see better grades, higher graduation rates. We see in terms of personal development, students who are having stronger leadership, communication, critical thinking, and problem-solving skills, as well as more resilience. And that's really what we want, right, in our community. We want a community that is vibrant and active and able to deal with the problems that we're facing. Karen invited me today to share a case study. So we know we've got this strong foundation. There's a lot of data out there telling us we all need to be getting outside more for a lot of benefits. And so I'm going to share a case study about Restoring Connections, which is a project of the Environmental Leadership Program at the University of Oregon that was launched in partnership with Mount Pisgah Arboretum and Adams Elementary School. The Restoring Connections Project is a place-based, experiential education, environmental education project. And it was designed on the premise that we need repeated and scaffolded interactions with nature to really build those relationships. So instead of the typical one field trip a year, at the end of the school year, we looked at working with a single cohort of children from kindergarten all the way to fifth grade and having repeated trips
to Mount Pisgah. So they were going out in the fall, the winter, and the spring. And each grade level explored a different ecosystem of the Southern Willamette Valley. So for example, first graders explored the oak woodlands, second graders explored the Douglas fir forest, et cetera. And each day had a similar rhythm. So we would start off with active, hands-on, interactive games and hands-on learning, like this, like cattail studies. And then in the afternoon, we would move to a more quiet, what we called sit spot time, in which children were placed along a trail, preferably out of sight of one another if possible, to have about 10 or 15 minutes to sit quietly on their own and to use all of their senses to connect with nature. Then they would be handed their field notebooks. And so for another 15 minutes, they would get to be field scientists and record their observations and draw and sketch and write about what they were observing. Then after that, we would pull everyone together for story time. And story of the day is a way that students could share their findings with the community. And then it created some sense of accountability. And really, stories were a critical component of this project because, as Robin Wall Kimmerer notes, stories are among our most potent tools for restoring the land as well as restoring our relationships to land. So we also, in addition to having the students tell their stories of the day, the guides use stories to build enthusiasm, to share content knowledge, natural history knowledge, but also to help model how to be in nature and to enjoy that experience through storytelling. Then at the very end of the day, we would pull everyone together and have a gratitude circle. And this was really a lovely way in which to gauge their growing sense of relationship. At the beginning, gratitude typically was extended to guides and to chaperones. And by the end of their first year, they had started to thank the Mount Pisgah Arboretum caretakers. By the end of their first grade, or somewhere in the middle of their first grade year, they started thanking the animals and the trees and the plants themselves. So this was our rhythm in every field trip. And in addition to having a rhythm for each trip, we had a rhythm each year. So in the fall, they were really introduced to the habitat and the focal species and the scientific concepts. Winter, we expanded on that. And then every spring, the students got to take their knowledge and their care for that place and put it into action by participating in a stewardship project. So first graders got to pull invasive weeds and plant native plants. Second graders got to help work on mulching the trails and learned about trail maintenance and why it's important to stay on the trail. Third graders studied habitats, and then they got to build habitats. So they built bird homes for violet-green swallows and bat boxes for the Townsend's big-eared bats and homes for mason bees. So all in all, the Restoring Connections program was really about restoring relationships and then restoring land. So really focused on that reciprocal relationship. We really provided intentional space and time for our students to make these personal connections to the land and to the animals and plants that they share their homes with. So in conclusion, I'll share three take-home points that we learned through this project and through the research we did evaluating this work. First is that partnering with public schools is a critical element when considering equity. In the US, children have access to public schools, which makes them crucial context for fostering relationships with nature. By working through schools, all students are able to participate and gain the benefits of nature that we've just been talking about. And they're able to be part of this regardless of their socioeconomic status, regardless of their race, their abilities. So regardless of background and identity, providing nature connection through schools provides access to everyone. Second, While our focus was really on developing this personal relationship and connection to nature, we were able to integrate the next generation science standards into our curriculum. And that was really important that teachers and principals, administrators didn't see this field trip as an add-on, as something extra or like a bonus at the end of the year for good behavior, but that this was really part of the curriculum. And we really spent time framing that both for the teachers and the chaperones and the students that this was not an all day free recess, crazy day, but that we were going to take our science classroom outside. And we found that despite a lot of concerns or initial worries that from teachers and parents that it would be chaotic and that learning when it happened, that we found if we framed it as our science classroom outside, that just like a classroom teacher does in the classroom, right, creates the class norms. It was very possible and easy to establish expectations and norms and to do a lot of real hands-on learning. And finally, I want to end with saying that we need to be more proactive in using our school grounds and our nearby parks for outside learning. Doing so is a strategic, cost-effective tool for improving academic, mental, physical well-being of our youth. And given this past year and the shutdowns due to COVID, we need it more now than ever.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.